Chapter 16, which is full of escapes and discoveries.
"This," said Princess Hilda, "is an outrage."
She had got this far when Twinkle somehow got away. He twisted out of the Lubberkin's purple arms and went racing away up the stairs, shrieking,
"Help! Help! Don't let them touch me!"
Both Lubberkins pushed Princess Hilda aside and charged upstairs after Twinkle. Princess Hilda reeled into the banisters and clung there, red in the face, and suddenly far from stately. Charmaine found herself racing upstairs after the Lubberkins, shouting,
"Leave him alone! How dare you!"
Afterward, she thought it was the sight of Princess Hilda looking like an ordinary person that did it. Down below, Sophie hovered a second and then shoved Morgan into the arms of the king.
"Keep him safe,"
she gasped at the king. Then she hauled her skirts up and raced upstairs after Charmaine, shouting,
"You just stop that! Do you hear?"
Jamal loyally labored up after them, yelling,
"Stop! Thief! Stop! Thief!"
and panting hugely. Behind him clambered his dog, as loyal as its master, uttering huge rasping growls, while Waif ran backward and forward at the bottom of the stairs, making a soprano thunderstorm of barking. Prince Ludovic hung over the banisters opposite Princess Hilda and laughed at the lot of them. The two Lubberkins caught Twinkle near the top of the flight, in a blur of uselessly fanning wings and shiny mauve muscles. Twinkle surged and kicked mightily. For a moment, his blue velvet legs seemed to be big, strong man-sized legs. One big leg landed hard in the nursemaid Lubberkin's stomach. The other came down on the stairs and braced him, while Twinkle's right fist landed on the second Lubberkin's nose with a meaty man-sized smack. Leaving both Lubberkins in a heap on the landing, Twinkle sped nimbly on upward. Charmaine saw him look earnestly backward and down as he whirled onto the next flight of stairs, making sure that she and Sophie and Jamal were still following. They followed, because the two Lubberkins picked themselves up with incredible speed and pelted upward after Twinkle. Charmaine and Sophie pelted upstairs too, and Jamal and the dog toiled on behind. Halfway up that next flight, the Lubberkins caught Twinkle again. Again there were hefty smacking sounds, and Twinkle got loose once more, and once more sped upward into the third flight of stairs. He made it most of the way to the top of those before the Lubberkins reached him and threw themselves on top of him. All three went down into a walloping, writhing heap of legs, arms, and fluttering purple wings. By this time, Charmaine and Sophie were flagging and nearly out of breath. Charmaine distinctly saw Twinkle's angelic face emerge from the tangle of bodies and watched them carefully. When Charmaine had toiled across the landing and started on that flight, followed by Sophie, who was clutching a stitch in her side, the bundle of bodies suddenly exploded apart. The purple bodies rolled aside, and Twinkle, loose again, went fleeting up the final flight of wooden stairs. By the time the Lubberkins had picked themselves up and started after him, Charmaine and Sophie were not far behind. Jamal and his dog were a long way in the rear. Up the wooden stairs they clattered, all the front five. Twinkle was climbing quite slowly now. Charmaine was fairly sure this was artistic, but the Lubberkins gave shouts of triumph and put on speed.
"Oh, no, not again," Sophie groaned, as Twinkle banged open the door at the top and shot out onto the roof. The Lubberkins shot out after him.
When Charmaine and Sophie toiled their way up there and stared out through the open door, while they tried to get their breaths back, they saw the two Lubberkins sitting astride the golden roof. They were about halfway along and looking very much as if they wished they were anywhere else. There was no sign of Twinkle. "Now what is he up to?" Sophie said. Almost as she said it, Twinkle appeared in the doorway, flushed and laughing angelic laughter, with his golden curls in a wind-blown halo.
"Come and see what I found," he said gleefully. "Just follow me."
Sophie clutched her side and pointed out at the roof.
"What about those two?" she panted. "Do we just hope they fall off?"
Twinkle grinned enchantingly.
"Wait and see."
He cocked his golden head, listening. Down below, the growling and scrabbling of the cook's dog was getting louder. It had overtaken its master and was now snarling and clattering its way up the wooden stairs, panting horribly. Twinkle nodded and turned toward the roof. He made a small gesture and muttered a word. The two lubbercans perched out there suddenly shrank with an unpleasant squelching sound and became two purplish small flopping things wagging about on the ridge of the golden roof.
What? Said Charmaine.
Twinkle's grin grew, if possible, even more angelic.
Squid, he said blissfully. The cook's dog will sell its soul for squid.
Sophie said, eh?
Oh, squids!
I get you. The cook's dog arrived as she spoke, with its legs going like pistons and drool hanging from its gnarly jaws. It shot out of the door and along the roof like a brown streak. Halfway along, its jaws went snap, crunch, and then snap, crunch again, and the squids were gone. Only then did the dog seem to notice where it was. It froze, with two legs on one side of the roof and two legs stiffly on the other, and whined piteously.
Oh, poor thing, Charmaine said.
The cook will rescue it, Twinkle said. You two follow me closely. You have to turn left through this door before your foot touches the roof.
He stepped through the door leftward and vanished.
Oh, I think I understand, Charmaine thought. This was like the doors in Great Uncle William's house, except that it was unnervingly high up. She let Sophie step through first, so that she could catch hold of Sophie's skirt if Sophie went wrong. But Sophie was more used to magic than Charmaine. She stepped left and vanished with no trouble at all. Charmaine had a distinctly wobbly moment before she dared to follow. She shut her eyes and stepped. But her eyes shot open of their own accord as she went, and she had a sideways sliding view of the golden roof giddily blazing past her. Before she could decide to scream "Eelf" to invoke the flying spell, she was elsewhere, in a warm, triangular space with rafters in the roof. Sophie said a bad word. In the dim light, she had stubbed her toe on one of the many dusty bricks piled around the place.
Naughty, naughty, Twinkle said.
Oh, shut up, Sophie said, standing on one leg to hold her toe. Why don't you grow up?
Not yet, I told you, Twinkle said. We still have Prince Ludovic to deceive.
Oh, look! This happened when I was here just now, too.
A golden light was spreading over the largest pile of bricks. The bricks picked up the light and glowed golden as well under the dust. Charmaine realized that they were not bricks at all, but ingots of solid gold. To make this quite clear, a golden banner appeared floating in front of the ingots. Old-fashioned letters on it said,
Prave the wizard Melicot, who hither the king hath called.
Huh, Sophie snorted, letting go of her toe. Melicot must have lisped just like you. Proper soulmates you and he would have been. Same size in swelled heads. He couldn't resist having his name up in lights, could he?
I don't need my name up in lights, Twinkle said with great dignity.
Tuh, said Sophie. Where are we? Charmaine asked quickly, because it rather looked as if Sophie was going to pick up a golden brick and brain Twinkle with it.
Is this the royal treasury?
No, under the golden roof,
Twinkle told her.
Cunning, isn't it? Everyone knows the roof isn't really gold, though nobody thinks of looking for the gold here.
He tipped up one golden brick, thumped it on the floor to knock the dust off, and dumped it into Charmaine's hands. It was so heavy that she nearly dropped it.
You carry the evidence, he said. I think the king is going to be very glad to see this.
Sophie, who seemed to have recovered her temper a little, said,
That lisp, it's driving me crazy. I think I hate it even more than I hate those golden curls.
But think how useful, Twinkle said.
Nasty Ludovic tried to kidnap me and forgot all about Morgan.
He turned his big blue eyes soulfully up at Charmaine.
I had a miserable childhood. Nobody loved me. I think I have a right to try again, looking prettier, don't you?
Don't listen to him, Sophie said. It's all a pose. How do we get out of here? I left Morgan with the king, and Ludovic's down there too. If we don't get back downstairs quickly, Ludovic's going to be thinking of grabbing Morgan any moment now.
And Calcifer asked me to tell you to be quick, Charmaine put in. The castle's waiting in Royal Square. I really came to tell you...
Before she could finish her sentence, Twinkle had done something that made the dusty loft rotate around them so that they were once more standing beside the open door to the roof. Beyond the door, Jamal was lying on his face along the roof ridge, shaking all over, with one hand stretched out, clutching his dog's left hind leg. The dog was growling horrendously. It hated having its leg held, and it hated the roof, but it was too frightened of falling to move. Sophie said, "Howl, he's only got one eye, and he's not balanced at all."
"I know," Twinkle said. "I know, I know."
He waved a hand, and Jamal came sliding backward toward the door, towing the snarling dog.
"I may be dead,"
Jamal gasped, as the two landed in a heap by Twinkle's feet.
"Why are we not dead?"
"Goodness knows," Twinkle said. "Excuse us. We need to see a king about a slab of gold."
He went pattering away down the stairs. Sophie raced after him, and Charmaine followed, lumbering rather because of the weight of the gold brick. Down they rushed, and down again, until they swung round the corner at the top of the final flight. They arrived there just at the moment when Prince Ludovic shouldered Princess Hilda aside, barged past Sim, and pulled Morgan out of the king's arms.
"Bad man!"
Morgan boomed. He seized Prince Ludovic's beautifully curled hair and dragged. The hair came off, leaving the prince's head smooth, bald, and purple.
"I told you so!"
Sophie screamed and seemed to take wing. She and Twinkle raced down the stairs side by side. The prince looked up at them and down at Waif, who was trying to bite his ankle and tried to drag his wig out of Morgan's hands. Morgan was beating Ludovic's face with it, still screaming, "Bad man!" The colourless gentleman called out,
"This way, Highness!"
And the two lubbercans raced for the nearest door.
"Not in the library!"
The king and the princess shouted with one voice. They meant it so much and were so commanding that the colourless gentleman actually stopped, turned, and led the prince off in another direction. This gave Twinkle just time to catch up with Prince Ludovic and hang on to the prince's trailing silken sleeve. Morgan gave a yell of delight and threw the wig down on Twinkle's face, more or less blinding him. Twinkle was towed helplessly along to the next nearest door, with the colourless gentleman sprinting ahead and Waif chasing, barking up a shrill tempest, and Sophie behind Waif shouting, "Put him down or I'll kill you!" Behind her, the king and the princess gave chase too.
"I say, this is a bit much," the king called out.
The princess simply ordered them to stop. The prince and the colourless gentleman tried to fling themselves and the children through the door and slam it in the faces of Sophie and the king. But the moment it slammed, Waif somehow burst the door open again and the rest of them came chasing through. Charmaine was last, with Sim. By this time, her arms were aching.
"Can you hold this?" she said to Sim. "It's evidence."
She passed Sim the gold brick while he was saying,
"Certainly, miss."
His hands and arms went right down with the weight of it. Charmaine left him juggling with it and scuttled into what turned out to be the big room with the rocking horses lining the walls. Prince Ludovic was standing in the middle of it, looking very strange with his bald purple head. He was now holding Morgan with one arm across Morgan's neck, and Waif was jumping and dancing round his feet, trying to reach Morgan. The wig was lying on the carpet like a dead animal.
"You'll do what I say," the prince was saying, "or this child suffers."
Charmaine's eye was caught by a sudden plunging blue flush from the fireplace. She looked and saw it was Calcifer, who must have come down the chimney in search of logs. He settled in among the unlighted wood there with a sigh of pleasure. When he saw Charmaine looking at him, he winked one orange eye at her.
"Suffers, I say," Prince Ludovic said dramatically.
Sophie looked at Morgan wriggling about in the prince's arms and then down at Twinkle, who was just standing there, staring at his fingers, as if he had never seen them before. She glanced across at Calcifer, and seemed to be trying not to laugh. Her voice came out wobbly as she said, "Your Highness, I warn you, you are making a big mistake."
"You certainly are," the king agreed, panting and red in the face from the chase. "We in High Norland do not as a rule go in for treason trials, but we shall take pleasure in trying you."
"How can you?" the prince demanded. "I'm not one of your subjects. I'm a Labakan."
"Then you cannot, by law, be king after my father," Princess Hilda stated. Unlike the king, she was quite cool again and very royal.
"Oh, can't I?" said the prince. "My parent, the Lubbock, says I am to be king. It intends to rule the country through me. It got rid of the wizard so that nothing can stand in our way. You must crown me king at once, or this child suffers. I am keeping him as a hostage. Apart from that, what wrong have I done?"
"You've taken all their money," Charmaine called out. "I saw you, both you Lubbockans, making the kobolds carry all their tax money to Castel Choir, and you're to let that little boy go before he strangles." Morgan's face was bright red by then, and he was struggling frantically. "I don't think Lubbockans have any real feelings," she thought, "and I don't understand why Sophie thinks it's so funny."
"My goodness," said the king. "So that's where it all went, Hilda. There's one puzzle solved at any rate. Thank you, my dear."
Prince Ludovic said disgustedly,
"Why are you so pleased? Didn't you listen to me?"
He turned to the colourless gentleman.
"He'll be offering us all crumpets next. Get on and work your spell. Get me out of here."
The colourless gentleman nodded and spread his faintly purple hands out in front of him. But that was the moment when Sim shuffled in with the gold brick in his arms. He shuffled swiftly across to the colourless gentleman and dropped the gold brick on the gentleman's toe. After that, a lot of things happened very quickly. As the gentleman, now purple with agony, hopped about yelling, Morgan seemed to arrive at his last gasp. His arms waved in a strange convulsive pattern, and Prince Ludovic found himself trying to carry a tall, full-grown man in an elegant blue satin suit. He dropped the man, who promptly turned round and hit the prince in the face.
"How dare you do that?" the prince screamed. "I'm not used to it."
"Bad luck," said Wizard Howl, and hit him again. This time Prince Ludovic caught his foot in the wig and sat down with a thump. "Only language a Lubbockan understands," the wizard remarked over his shoulder to the king. "Had enough, Ludi, old boy." At the same time, Morgan, who seemed to be wearing Twinkle's blue velvet suit, very crumpled and much too big for him, rushed at the wizard, booming,
"Dad, Dad, Dad!"
"Oh, I see," Charmaine thought. "They changed places somehow. That's pretty good magic. I'd like to learn how you do that." She wondered, while she watched the wizard carefully keeping Morgan away from the prince, why Howl had wanted to be prettier than he was. He was most people's idea of a very handsome man. Although, she thought, his hair was perhaps a little unreal. It fell over his blue satin shoulders in improbably beautiful flaxen curls. But also at the same time, Sim stood back while the colourless gentleman hopped about in front of him and seemed to be trying to make a formal announcement of some kind. But Morgan was raising such a clamour, and Waif was barking so hard that all anyone could hear was, "Your Majesty" and "Royal Highness." While Sim was speaking, Wizard Howl looked across at the fireplace and nodded. There was something that happened then between the wizard and Calcifer that was not exactly a flash of light, and not exactly a flash of invisible light either. While Charmaine was still trying to describe it to herself, Prince Ludovic humped into himself and vanished downward. So did the colourless gentleman. In their places were two rabbits. Wizard Howe looked at them and then at Calcifer. "Why rabbits?" he asked, swinging Morgan up into his arms. Morgan at once stopped yelling and there was a moment of silence.
"All that hopping about," Calcifer said, "it put me in mind of rabbits."
The colourless gentleman was still hopping about, But he was now hopping as a large white rabbit with bulging purple eyes. Prince Ludovic, who was a pale fawn colour with even bigger purple eyes, seemed too astonished to move. He twitched his ears and wobbled his nose. This was when Waif attacked. Meanwhile, the visitors Sim had been trying to announce were already in the room. Waif killed the fawn-coloured rabbit almost under the runners of the kobold's painted sled chair, which was being pushed by the Witch of Montalbino. Great Uncle William, rather pale and thin but evidently much better, was propped on a pile of blue cushions inside the chair. He and the witch and Timmins, who was standing on the cushions, all leaned over the chair's carved blue side to watch Waif give a tiny snarl and toss the fawn-coloured rabbit sideways by its neck, and then, with another miniature snarl, hurl it across her back to land with a flump, dead on the carpet.
"Good gracious," said Wizard Norland, the King, Sophie and Charmaine. "I'd have thought Waif was too small to do that."
Princess Hilda waited for the rabbit to land and sailed across to the sled chair. She ignored, grandly, the frantic rushing and scrambling as Waif chased the white rabbit round and round the room.
"My dear Princess Matilda," the princess said, holding both hands out to Peter's mother, "what a long time it is since we've seen you here. I do hope you mean to make us a long visit."
"That depends," the witch said dryly. "My daughter's second cousin," the king explained to Charmaine and Sophie, "prefers to be called the Witch of Somewhere, usually. Always gets irritated if anyone calls her Princess Matilda. My daughter makes a point of it, of course. Hilda doesn't hold with inverted snobbery."
By this time, Wizard Howl had hoisted Morgan up onto his shoulders so that they could both watch as Waif cornered the white rabbit behind the fifth rocking horse along. There was some more tiny snarling. Presently, the white rabbit's corpse came flying out across the rockers, dead and limp.
"Hooray!"
Morgan boomed, beating his fists on his father's flaxen head. Howl rather hastily hoisted Morgan down and handed him on to Sophie.
"Have you told them about the gold yet?" he asked her.
"Not yet. The evidence got dropped on someone's foot," Sophie said, taking firm charge of Morgan.
"Tell them now," Hal said. "There's something else that's strange here."
He bent down and caught Waif as she trotted back to Charmaine. Waif squirmed and whined and craned and did everything she could to make it clear that it was Charmaine she wanted to go to.
"Shortly, shortly,"
Hal said, turning Waif around in a puzzled way. Eventually, he carried her over to the sled chair, where the king was jovially shaking Wizard Norland's hand while Sophie showed the gold ingot to them. The witch and Timmins and Princess Hilda all crowded round Sophie, staring and demanding to know where Sophie had found the gold. Charmaine stood in the middle of the room, feeling quite left out. "I know I'm being quite unreasonable," she thought. "I'm just the same as I always was. But I want Waif back. I want to take her with me when they send me back home to Mother." It was obvious to her that Peter's mother was going to look after Great Uncle William now, and where did that leave Charmaine? There was a terrific crash. The walls shook, causing Calcifer to shoot out of the fireplace and hover over Charmaine's head. Then, in very slow motion, a large hole opened in the wall beside the fireplace. The wallpaper peeled away first, followed by the plaster underneath it. Then the dark stones behind the plaster crumbled away and vanished, until nothing was left but a dark space. Finally, not in slow motion at all, Peter shot backward through the hole and landed lying in front of Charmaine.
"Hole!" boomed Morgan, pointing.
"I think you're right," Calcifer agreed.
Peter did not seem in the least put out. He looked up at Calcifer and said, "So you're not dead, then? I knew she was making a stupid fuss. She's never sensible about things."
"Oh, thank you, Peter,"
Charmaine said. "And when have you ever been sensible?"
Where have you been?
Yes, indeed, said the Witch of Montalbino.
I'd like to know that, too. She pushed the sled chair right up to Peter, so that Great-Uncle William and Timmins were gazing down on Peter along with everyone else, except for Princess Hilda. Princess Hilda was looking ruefully at the hole in the wall. Peter did not seem worried at all. He sat up.
"Hello, Mum," he said cheerfully. "Why aren't you in Ingry?"
"Because Wizard Howl is here," said his mother. "And you?"
"I've been in Wizard Norland's workshop," Peter said. "I went there as soon as I gave Charmaine the slip."
He waved his hands with the rainbow of strings tied round his fingers to show how he got there. But he gave Wizard Norland a slightly anxious look.
"I've been very careful in there, sir. Really?"
"Have you indeed?" said Great-Uncle William, looking at the hole in the wall. It seemed to be slowly healing up. The dark stones were closing gently in toward the middle of it, and the plaster was growing across after the stones.
"And what were you doing there for a whole day and a night, may I ask?"
"Divining spells," Peter explained. "They take ages. It was lucky you had all those food spells in there, sir, or I'd have been really hungry by now. And I used your camp bed. I hope you don't mind."
By the look on Great-Uncle William's face, it was clear that he did mind. Peter added hurriedly,
"But the spells worked, sir. The royal treasure must be here, where we all are, because I told the spell to take me to wherever it was."
"And so it is," said his mother. "Wizard Howl has already found it."
"Oh," said Peter.
He looked very cast down, but then he brightened up.
"I did a spell that worked, then."
Everyone looked at the slowly healing hole. The wallpaper was now moving softly in across the plaster, but it was obvious that the wall would never be quite the same again. It had a soggy, wrinkled look.
"I'm sure this is a great comfort to you, young man," Princess Hilda said bitterly.
Peter looked at her blankly, obviously wondering who she was. His mother sighed.
"Peter, this is Her Highness Princess Hilda of High Norland. Perhaps you would be good enough to get up and bow to her and to her father, the King. They are, after all, near relations of ours."
"How come?" Peter asked, but he scrambled to his feet and bowed in a very mannerly way.
"My son, Peter," said the witch, "who is now most probably heir to your throne, sire."
"Pleased to meet you, my boy," the King said. "This has all become very confusing. Won't somebody give me an explanation?"
"I will give you one, sire," the witch said.
"Perhaps we should all sit down," the princess suggested. "Sim, be good enough to remove these two dead rabbits, please."
"Very good, ma'am," Sim said.
He shuffled rapidly about the room, gathering up the two corpses. He was clearly so anxious not to miss whatever the witch was going to say that Charmaine was sure he simply dumped the rabbits outside the door. By the time he hurried back into the room, everyone had settled onto the grand but faded sofas, except for Great-Uncle William, who lay back on his cushions looking thin and weary, and Timmins, who sat himself on a cushion beside Great-Uncle William's ear. Calcifer went back to roost in the grate. Sophie took Morgan on her knee, where Morgan put his thumb in his mouth and went to sleep, and Wizard Howl at last handed Waif back to Charmaine. He did it with such a dazzlingly apologetic smile that Charmaine felt quite flustered. "I like him much better as a grown-up man," she thought. No wonder Sophie was so annoyed with Twinkle. Waif, meanwhile, squeaked and bounced and put her paws on Charmaine's dangling glasses in order to lick her chin. Charmaine rubbed Waif's ears and stroked the frayed hair on the top of Waif's head while she listened to what Peter's mother had to say.
"As you may know," the witch said, "I married my cousin Hans Nicholas, who was at that time third in succession to the throne of High Norland. I was fifth. But as a woman, I didn't really count. And besides, the only thing I wanted in the world was to be a professional witch. Hans was not interested in being king either. His passion was for climbing mountains and discovering caves and new passes among the glaciers. We were quite content to leave our cousin Ludovic to be heir to the throne. Neither of us liked him, and Hans always said Ludovic was the most selfish and unfeeling person he knew. But we both thought that if we went away and showed we had no interest in the throne, he wouldn't bother us. So we moved to Montalbino, where I took up office as witch, and Hans became a mountain guide. And we were very happy, until just after Peter was born, when it became dreadfully plain that our other cousins were dying like flies, and not only dying, but also said to be wicked, and dying because of their wickedness. When my cousin, Isola Matilda, who was the kindest and gentlest of girls, was killed while apparently attempting to murder someone, Hans became positive that Ludovic was doing it, systematically killing off all the other heirs to the throne, he said, and giving us all a bad name while he does it. I became simply terrified for Hans and for Peter. By that time, Hans was next heir after Ludovic, and Peter came after that. So I got out my broomstick, put Peter into a sling on my back, and flew all the way down to Ingerry to consult Mrs. Pentstemon, who had trained me as a witch. I believe, the witch said, turning to Hal, that she trained you too, Wizard Hal. Hal gave her one of his scintillating smiles. That was much later. I was her very last pupil. Then you know that she was the best, said the Witch of Montalbino. You agree? Hal nodded. You could trust everything she told you, the witch went on. She was always right. Sophie nodded too at this, a little ruefully. But when I consulted her, said the witch, she was not sure that there was anything I could do, except take Peter and go very far away. Inico, she thought. I said, but what about Hans? And she agreed I was right to be worried. Give me half a day, she said, to find an answer for you. And she went and shut herself into her workroom. Less than half a day later, she came out almost in a panic. I'd never seen her so upset before. My dear, she said, your cousin Ludovic is a vile creature called a lubbocan, offspring of a lubbock that roams the hills between High Norland and Montalbino, and he is doing just what your hand suspected he was doing, no doubt with the help of that lubbock. You must hurry home to Montalbino at once. Let us pray you get there in time. And on no account tell anyone who this little lad of yours is. Don't tell him or anyone else, or the lubbock will try to kill him too.
Oh, is that why you never told me all this before? Peter said. You should have done. I can look after myself.
That, said his mother, is exactly what poor Hans thought too. I should have made him come to Ingerry with us. Don't interrupt, Peter. You nearly made me forget the last thing Mrs. Pentstemon said to me, which was, there is an answer, my dear. In your native land, there is, or was, something called the elf gift belonging to the royal family, which has the power to keep the king safe and the whole country with him. Go and ask the king of High Norland to lend this elf gift to Peter. It will keep him safe. So I thanked her and put Peter on my back again and flew as fast as I could to Montalbino. I meant to ask Hans to come with me to High Norland to ask for the elf gift. But when I got home, they told me Hans was up in the Greta-horns with the mountain rescue team. I had the most horrible premonition then. I flew straight on up into the mountains with Peter still on my back. He was crying with hunger by then, but I didn't dare stop. And I just got there in time to see the lubbock start the avalanche that killed Hans. The witch stopped here, as if she could not bear to go on. Everyone waited respectfully, while she swallowed and dabbed at her eyes with a multicoloured handkerchief. Then she shook her shoulders efficiently and said, I put protections round Peter at once, of course, the strongest possible. They've never once been off him.
I let him grow up as secretly as possible, and I didn't mind at all when Ludovic began telling people that I was a mad prisoner in Castel Choir. That meant no one knew about Peter, you see. And the day after the avalanche, I left Peter with a neighbour and went to High Norland. "You probably remember me coming, don't you?" she asked the king.
"Yes, I do," said the king. "But you said nothing about Peter or Hans, and I had no idea it was all so sad and urgent. And of course I hadn't got the elf gift. I didn't even know what it looked like. All you did was to start me off, together with my good friend Wizard Norland here, looking for the elf gift. We've been hunting for it for 13 years now, and we haven't got very far, have we, William?"
"We've got nowhere at all," Great Uncle William agreed from the sled chair. He chuckled.
"But people will keep thinking that I'm the expert on the elf gift. Some folks even say that I'm the elf gift, and I guard the king. I do try to guard him, of course, but not like an elf gift would."
"That's one of the reasons I sent Peter to you," said the witch. "It was always possible that the rumours were true, and I knew you could keep Peter safe anyway. I've been looking for that elf gift myself for years, because I thought it could probably get rid of Ludovic. Beatrice of Strangia told me that Wizard Howl of Ingry was better at divination than any wizard in the world, so I went to Ingry to ask him to find it for me." Wizard Howl threw his flaxen head back and began to laugh. "And you have to admit that I did find it," he said, "most unexpectedly. There it sits, on Miss Charming's lap."
"What? Waif?" said Charmaine.
Waif wagged her tail and looked demure. Howl nodded. "That's right. Your little enchanting dog." He turned to the king. "Don't those records of yours talk about a dog anywhere?"
"Frequently," said the king. "But I had no idea. My great-grandfather held a state funeral for his dog when it died, and I simply wondered what all the fuss was about."
Princess Hilda coughed gently.
"Of course, most of our oil paintings have been sold now," she said. "But I do remember that a lot of our earlier kings were painted with a dog at their sides. They were generally a little, nobler looking than Waif, however."
"I imagine they come all sizes and shapes," Great Uncle William put in. "It looks to me as if the elf gift is something certain dogs inherit, and the later kings forgot to breed them properly. Now, for instance, when Waif has her puppies a bit later this year..."
"What?" said Charmaine. "Puppies?"
Waif wagged her tail again and looked even more demure. Charmaine pushed Waif's chin up and stared accusingly into her eyes.
"The cook's dog?" she asked.
Waif blinked bashfully.
"Oh, Waif," Charmaine wailed. "Goodness knows what they'll look like."
"We must wait and hope," said Great Uncle William. "One of those pups will have inherited the elf gift. But there is one other important aspect to this, my dear. Waif has adopted you, and this makes you High Norland's elf gift guardian. Also, since the Witch of Montalbino here tells me that the Boke of Palimpsest has adopted you too..."
"It has, hasn't it?"
I it did make me do spells out of it," Charmaine admitted.
"Then that settles it," Great Uncle William said, nestling contentedly back on his cushions. "You come and live with me as my apprentice from now on. You need to learn how to help Waif protect the country properly."
"Yes, oh, but," Charmaine babbled, "Mother won't allow me. She says magic's not respectable. My dad won't mind, probably," she added, "but my mother..."
"I'll fix her," said Great Uncle William. "If necessary, I'll set your Aunt Sempronia on her." "Better still," said the king, "I'll make it a royal decree. Your mother will be impressed by that. You see, We need you, my dear.
Yes, but I want to help you with the books, Charmaine cried out. Princess Hilda gave another of her gentle coughs. I shall be rather busy, she said, redecorating and renovating this mansion. The gold ingot was lying on the carpet by her feet. She gave it a tender prod with one sensible shoe. Now we are solvent again, she said happily. I suggest that you stand in for me in the library with my father twice a week, if Wizard Norland will spare you.
Oh, thank you, Charmaine said.
And, added the princess, as for Peter...
There's no need to concern yourself with Peter, the witch interrupted. I shall be staying with Peter and Charmaine to look after the house, at least until Wizard Norland is back on his feet. Maybe I shall live there permanently.
Charmaine, Peter, and Great Uncle William exchanged looks of horror. I see why she got to be so efficient, being left all alone with Peter to protect, Charmaine thought. But if she stays in that house, I'll go back to live with Mother.
Nonsense, Matilda, said Princess Hilda. Peter is very much our concern, now that it is clear that he is our crown prince. Peter will live here and commute to Wizard Norland for lessons in magic. You must go back to Montalbino, Matilda. They need you there.
And us kobolds will look after the house the way we always used to,
Timmins piped.
Oh, good, Charmaine thought. I don't think I'm really house-trained yet, and Peter certainly isn't.
Bless you, Timmins. Bless you, Hilda, Great-Uncle William murmured. The thought of all that efficiency in my house.
I shall be fine, Mum, Peter said. You don't have to protect me any more.
If you're sure, the witch said. It seems to me now, said Princess Hilda, at least as efficiently as the witch. It only remains for us to say goodbye to our kind, helpful, if somewhat eccentric guests, and wave them off in their castle. Come along, all of you.
Whoops, said Calcifer, and shot away up the chimney. Sophie stood up, dislodging Morgan's thumb from his mouth. Morgan woke, looked round, saw that his father was there, and looked round some more. His face crumpled up.
Dinkle, he said. Where, Dinkle?
He started to cry.
Now look what you've started, Sophie said to Howl. I can always turn into Twinkle again, Howl suggested. Don't you dare, Sophie said, and marched away into the damp hallway after Sim.
5 minutes later, they were all gathered on the front steps of the mansion to watch Sophie and Howl hauling the struggling, crying Morgan through the door of the castle. As the door shut on Morgan's yells of, Dinkle, 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 Charmaine bent and murmured to Waif in her arms.
You did protect the country, didn't you? And I never even noticed.
By this time, half the people in High Norland were gathered in Royal Square to stare at the castle. They all watched with disbelief as the castle rose slightly into the air and glided toward the road that led southward. It was hardly more than an alley, really.
It'll never fit, people said.
But the castle somehow squeezed itself narrow enough to drift away along it and out of sight. The citizens of High Norland gave it a cheer as it went.
The End. You've been listening to House of Many Ways by Diana Wynne Jones, narrated by Jenny Sterlin. This book is copyrighted 2008 by Diana Wynne Jones. This recording is copyrighted 2009 by Recorded Books. If you've enjoyed this book and this performance, Recorded Books recommends Vampirates, Demons of the Ocean by Justin Somper, narrated by Daniel Philpott. The year is 2505. The oceans have risen, and a new era of piracy is dawning. A vicious storm separates twins Connor and Grace Tempest, destroying their boat and leaving them fighting for their lives in the cruel cold water. Picked up by one of the more notorious pirate ships, Connor soon finds himself wielding a cutlass. But does he have the stomach to be a pirate? Grace, on the other hand, finds herself on board a more mysterious ship. Kept under lock and key, she's assured no harm will come to her, just as long as she follows the enigmatic captain's rules. Can the twins survive life on board and find their way back to each other? You'll find a wide selection of titles in the Recorded Books catalogue, including bestsellers, mysteries, classics, histories, and more. Call us toll-free or log on to www.recordedbooks.com to learn about our latest releases and special offers, order another recorded book, or to read author interviews and narrator profiles. Don't forget to ask about easy 30-day rentals by mail. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.